Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the I Beg to Differ department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Yeah, well, we get those every week, I Beg to Differ. But this one is legitimate. It comes from a guy, I can give his name, Chris Rule, and here's what he says.
Oh, I think the first line there said, please don't use my name. Isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Actually, this is not addressed to us, but addressed to Mr. Berman.
Ah, okay.
I read his mail. Dear Mr. Berman, as the producer of Car Talk, you must have major decision-making authority as to the show's content. Yeah, he does. I have listened to Car Talk for many years and agree with many others that it is one of the best programs on radio. Well, Doug Berman is responsible for that. I must take issue, with the ending of every show where one of the hosts states that, quote, well, you've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk, end quote. The wonderful thing about radio is that the listeners are free to pursue other activities while the show is on.
Of course.
I have built several decorative privacy fences for myself and my neighbors, a 100-square-foot barn for yard equipment storage, a French drain, a large patio deck, and other projects while listening to Car Talk. I have become a fairly good weekend carpenter because of this automotive advice program.
Uh-huh.
I must say that I have never wasted an hour listening to your program, and in fact, it has helped me develop better-than-average woodworking skills. Thank you very much, Chris Rule from Oklahoma.
Really? Well, it's good for him that the noise of the saw drowns out most of the show.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the secret.
I'm sure he's got a big table saw out in his backyard.
And he leaves it running all the time. Never shuts it off.
Well, but he is right. You don't have to just sit and listen. In fact, it's not recommended.
No, you could hurt yourself. But look, if you've got a question about your car, or you happen to have a little time between woodworking projects, give us a call. The number is 888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi there. My name's Davina.
Davina?
Yes.
Davina or Divina?
Davina.
Da.
Oh, I thought it was Divina, as in how divine.
Well, sure.
Where are you from? Someplace like Paradise, Connecticut?
Oh, right. No, I'm from Seattle.
Where'd you get that name?
Well, it's feminine for David, and my father's name is David.
Ah. I thought that was Davida.
That's another form of it.
Davina.
That's the correct form.
Well, I have to say, it's very mellifluous.
It flows from the tongue.
Yeah, I mean, it's no Arup Gupta, don't get me wrong, but it is pretty good.
Anyway, what's cooking?
Okay, well, I have a 1995 Jeep Wrangler,
mm-hmm.
And about 3 months ago, it started making this awful rattling noise and shaking whenever I would start it. And it would also occur if I was going uphill and pressing on the gas.
Yeah.
Especially if I was going in first gear, going uphill.
Especially in first gear.
Yeah, it seems to occur, it's loudest and shakes really bad when it's in first gear.
Oh, yeah? What alerted you that there was something wrong?
Well, yeah. I took it to the Jeep dealer.
Yeah.
And they told me that my catalytic converter was broken and rattling around inside my exhaust system.
I could believe that. It wouldn't make the thing shake so that you could feel it. Are you sure that you're feeling something and not just hearing something?
Well, I can even feel it in my stick shift. You know, it rattles and shakes when it...
You might be able to feel it in the stick shift.
And it definitely feels like it's coming from the back of the car. But anyway, they replaced it all.
The back of the car is a foot away from the front.
That's true. But they replaced it all. They replaced the catalytic converter.
And it still does it, right?
It still does it.
I believe you. Because I didn't like the answer in the first place. Something else is making... If it's really shaking and you feel it...
Yeah.
Then something else is happening.
Do you feel it as you're letting the clutch out? Or... After
you
let the clutch out completely.
Oh, it's as I'm letting the clutch out.
Oh.
fatal?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
So while your foot is still in the process of engaging the clutch, that's when you feel the shaking and you...
Yes, because it's sort of, you know, as I'm letting the clutch out, I'm also putting on the gas, and it's usually when I'm going up a hill. So there's a lot of times where, you know...
So what if your foot is finally completely off the clutch? The shaking is then gone, huh?
Yeah, I think you're right.
It is...
Although, I have to tell you, though, when I'm sitting at a stoplight, I've felt it as well. Right. Oh, but you know what? It's when I have my clutch in, I think.
Oh, really? Do you have any trouble?
In or out? I mean, come on. Does it happen when the clutch is depressed or not?
Yeah.
Or in between? All three?
Depressed or in between.
How depressed are you?
Well, it rains a lot in Seattle.
So... You're sitting at a light, your foot is off the clutch?
If my foot is off the clutch, I don't feel it. It's when my foot is on the clutch.
Ah!
Do you have any trouble shifting it?
No.
You will.
I will.
Sadly, we will both come to the same conclusion.
Oh, no.
Yes.
That you need a new clutch. You have a broken spring.
Really?
Yeah. Either that or your clutch release bearing fork is cracked or falling off. So it's awful. Whatever it is, it's awful.
Terrible.
Well, whatever it is, it's hundreds of dollars.
Oh, no.
And it's definitely in the clutch somewhere.
But look at the bright side of things. You have a brand new catalytic converter.
I do. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Well, save up for a new clutch. Put it on your Christmas list.
Wow. Okay. I'll do that.
Good luck, Davina.
Thanks so much.
You're going to need it. Bye-bye.
Oh, no. Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Al Atherton in Nashville, Tennessee.
Hi, Al.
Nashville.
So what's happening, Al?
Well, I have a question for you.
Okie doke.
Okay. And it's based on a friendly discussion between my brother and I. Almost turned into an argument, but I steer it away. He's
brothers can be like that.
Is your brother younger than you or older?
Oh, he's older.
And he's probably a jerk, isn't he?
Well, then listen to what he says, you fathead!
He's always right.
Well, let's see if he's right this time.
All right. He's really concerned that I drive his truck into the garage and for him and park it too close to the wall, and the truck can't be backed out of the garage because I've parked it carelessly.
Mm-hmm.
And I said... Anytime you wheel something into something and you drive it into the garage, you can back it out the same way it came in, as long as you don't slip on the pavement or skid sideways or crawl or something like that. Hmm. So he said, no, you can get it in there, jam it in there wrong, and get it to where it won't come back out. And I said, no matter how difficult it is, it's possible to back it out to the same track it went in on.
So what you're saying is you're pulling in, and one side of the vehicle is too close to the wall.
Yeah, and so then it gets kind of trapped by an exterior wall that's outside the garage where if you try to back out, it's tricky.
Why do you do this? Just to tick him off, huh?
No, I had to move his truck because I had to get mine moved out of the way or something like that.
Well, you know, I think that theoretically he's correct.
Oh, no.
Well, I think. I'm working on it right now.
Okay.
But don't forget, when you pull in, it's the front wheels that are doing the turning.
Right.
And I think it is possible for you to get into a place where you can't get out.
Well, I remember years ago.
I remember the same thing.
We had...
There you go. See, that's it. When I lived in Brookline.
My brother lived in Brookline, which is the town, in fact, where the station is located. And after the show, he says to me, there's a gal who lives in my building whose car wouldn't start. We have to give her a jump start.
And in this particular building that I lived in, the only way you could park was to pull down this little narrow, what would you call it?
Like alleyway.
A little alleyway with a 90-degree turn in it.
At one end.
Yeah. No, in the middle.
In the middle. In the middle. That's right,
right,
in the middle.
So you had to take a 90-degree turn to get into this thing, and it was about as wide as the car.
So here I am driving my newly painted LTD, the one that was later to burn up in the hotel garage in Montreal. And
that's an ill-fated car, wasn't it?
It was, right from the beginning. So Tommy says, hang a right, hang a left, hang a right. And we drive down this alleyway.
So we can jumpstart this girl's car.
And I remember it was Super Bowl Sunday.
And it was snowing.
And
like
it was cold, and it was miserable. And I didn't want to be there. So we jumpstart her car, and to add insult to injury, the car won't start because the battery's not dead because it went dead. She drained the battery trying to start it because she was out of gas. So we give up. I throw the jumper cables in the back of the car. He says, see you later, and he goes home. And I attempt now, because at the end of this alleyway is this little parking area,
right,
to turn around and drive out.
But you can't.
But I can't.
But you could back out to the same
right.
Time.
Well, you would think that, wouldn't you?
Well, I didn't know that I could back out. Well, you would assume, yes. In fact,
this
that's the way out.
The question.
Yes, I think you are right, Al. I think if you can pull in, you can back out. Don't forget, I pulled into the
yes, you did
the alleyway, and I ended off. Actually, we got out a peculiar way. We ended up jacking up the car and pushing it off the jack. To make it negotiate the turn.
Don't forget, it's snowing out. It's dark.
And it's about five degrees. And the jack is about 5 degrees.
And we can't turn the car around because there's not enough room in this little lot.
And it's wedged in, threatening to damage my new paint job. So we had to jack up the rear end of the car and push it off the jack so we could move it over 6 inches. And then we kept doing this until we finally negotiated the turn. And then with tires of smoke, and I pulled out of there and made it home to see the last quarter of the Super Bowl.
And you waited all this time to punish somebody for it. And it's me.
But I think I'm going to stay on your side. I think if you pull the thing in, the problem is that you know exactly how you turn the wheel to get in there. And if he does anything at all to the wheel to get out. Or if you were real nasty, if you pulled in and then turned the wheel after you stopped, he'd never figure it out.
Yeah.
But he'd have to recreate his own bad driving first and then my bad driving.
That's right.
Yeah, he would. So I think, theoretically, it is possible for him to get into a mess that he can't get out of, but tough.
Yeah. That's what he gets for being a jerky older brother.
Yeah.
See you, Al.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK.
That's 888-227-8255. Very good. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Dee from Oxnard, California.
D-E-E?
Uh-huh.
Hi, Dee from Oxnard.
Uh-huh.
What's up?
Well, now that the weather's getting colder, my husband, we decided to get rid of our new cars that we were making payments on, and we decided to buy a couple previously owned cars and pay them off, so we just own them. And my husband's in the car business, so he called me, and he's like, oh, I got a white Durango, and it's got beige interior. And I'm like, oh, great, 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 you know, bring it home. So we got it, but I swore I would never get a car that didn't have heated seats again, and it doesn't have heated seats.
Yeah.
And now the cold weather's hit, and my butt's, like, freezing.
Wait, how cold does it get in Oxnard?
It's cold. It's like in the low 50s now, and it gets in the 40s.
Low 50s?
Come on. My heart bleeds for you.
The low 50s? That's spring around here.
We're not going to see the low 50s until probably May 1st.
I'm from Rochester, New York, so I know cold.
Oh, you know cold.
And you know that 50 degrees is not cold, but yet you become so accustomed to the mild sissy weather you get in Oxnard.
Sissy weather.
That you can't take it anymore.
I used to go to the gym, and I would go out in the morning, put my seat heater on, and then I'd go to the gym, and I'd be like, oh, God, this feels so good. And then now I don't even go anymore because I'm just too cold to sit on the car seat.
So is you considered the hot water bottle?
A hot water bottle?
How about
no,
a nice shielding cover?
Well, there's that, you know, there is that, and that works pretty well.
Well, that would help, but you sit on a heated seat, right?
I hate them.
You do?
Well,
I do.
I think they sell. I'm not so sure, but I'm 99.9% sure that one of the companies out there that will send you a catalog any day now, as soon as they find out your name, sells a thing that you can plug into the cigarette lighter that will heat your seat. Because they even have a massage thing that you can put on your seat, you know?
That's right.
That'd be good. Well, my husband had it in his first car, and it accidentally got turned on in the summertime. And I said, honey, I don't feel good. And we couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And the heat seat was on high.
Oh, I'll tell you. I mean, a bran muffin and a cup of coffee and a heated seat, and that could be a disaster.
Well, but I don't know if this is – I think it's just a woman thing. Because one of my wife's cars had a heated seat, and I couldn't stand to have the thing on.
Now, you could, by the way. You could just buy a heated seat from the junkyard because the wiring's already there.
Oh, that's not, Oh, you have to put switches in and stuff.
Yeah, switches, smitches. You just wire the thing, leave it on all the time.
Oh, you guys, my husband.
No, you
know how they say husbands can't put a nail in the wall?
He can't
Mine
put a switch in?
Can't even get the hammer out of the toolbox.
But he must have some kind of connection if he's in the car business.
Oh, this is true, yeah.
He must have some shady associates that can score a seat for him and install it.
Yeah,
and the truth of the matter
is... The junkyard is the place to buy it.
The seat doesn't have to... the switch doesn't have to be in the usual place. The switch can be any place.
Okay.
How do you like the Durango?
I love it.
Yeah.
My husband actually works for that company, so
Dodge.
We always try to get where, you know, that product. But I like it a lot. I like the new one, though, but we've made the promise that we were going to, you know, pay our cars off and not have car payments.
Yeah, well, the new one you can get with a heated seat.
So I went and got a job because I'm going to get a new one.
With a heated seat. In the meantime, get a Shirling seat cover. I think that might be the best thing to do.
Okay.
See you later, Dee. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, look, it's time for us to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll answer last week's puzzle, which is about sartorial splendor.
Ooh, as you know, I'm a real clothes horse.
Oh, real clothes horse is what? Anyway, the puzzle was about Italian clothing.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll have the whole story and more of your car questions in just a minute. So please stay tuned.
Tinted cars make me think of you. Sunglasses on in the bowling alley bar, and the sound of the crashing pins behind us when we kissed the night I wrecked my father's car.
And even though companies that make sound-deadening acoustic tiles see their stock prices shoot up whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk...
Yeah, like if you're a prison warden and need to send inmates running back to their cells.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean...
Old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, here to talk about cars, car repair, this is appropriate, and the answer to last week's puzzler.
Yeah, and it's about Italian suits, right?
Well, not suits, but shirts.
Oh.
This was sent in by Jane Hinckley, and here it is. You ready?
Yeah.
Sunny Italy, the land of our ancestors, Tommy. The land of fabulous food, amazing art. And our wacko cousin Nunzio. Now, while many Italian cities claim to have the best cuisine or maybe the most impressive art collections, none of them can match Naples for crazy drivers. In fact, Neapolitan drivers might be just the craziest drivers in the entire world.
I wouldn't doubt that at all.
And they adhere to a simple creed. I'm the only driver on the road, and mine is the only car. Now, in addition to being the craziest of drivers, Neapolitan men are without a doubt also slaves to fashion, unlike some people I know. So when a certain law was enacted a few years ago in Italy, it led to an unusual and a unique fashion trend. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Neapolitan men began wearing white shirts with a diagonal black stripe. So the question is, what was the law that led to this odd style in men's attire?
It wasn't the Men Must Wear White Shirts with Black Stripes Act. Was that it?
No, that was not it. But it was a law that Italian men found offensive,
yeah.
Especially Neapolitan men. In 2003, Italy passed a nationwide seatbelt law.
Oh.
Requiring that everyone in a car had to wear a seatbelt.
Yeah.
And also allowing the carabinieri...
Yeah.
The right to stop anybody who they thought wasn't wearing a seatbelt, even if that person was not involved in any other infraction.
Oh, so you can get stopped and get a ticket.
Exactly. So what better way to make the carabinieri think you are wearing your seatbelt? By wearing a shirt with a diagonal stripe around from your left shoulder down to your right, down to your waist. Okay, and it'll look like you're wearing the seatbelt. And of course, if you were the passenger, you had to wear the shirt inside out. Anyway, do we have a winner?
We certainly do. Our winner this week is John Slater from Wheaton, Illinois, and for having his answer selected for, at random, I should say, from all the correct answers that we got. John is going to get from us a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at cartalk.com, which is our website, where you can get either our mother's CD called Maternal Combustion, Calls About Moms and Cars, or one of our collections of highly disrespectful car music, which is the best of the songs that we play during the breaks of the show. Not much of a choice, John, but hey, you wrote to us. We didn't write to you.
Yeah, we didn't go looking for you. Anyway, we have a brand new puzzle coming up from my prisoner and warden series.
Oh.
Yeah, prisoner, warden, and hats, and that'll be coming
up. You've used a hats, prisoner, warden.
Well, this is a little different one. This is one of many.
It's not the same one.
No.
You're sure?
I got this out of Modern Jailer magazine. Well, they have a little section, you know. Anyway, that'll be coming up in the third half of the show, so stay tuned. Right now, if you have a question about your car, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Ephraim. I'm calling from Brookline, Mass.
Ephraim, how you doing?
Good, doing pretty well.
You and the Zimbalist Junior guy are the only two... No, I've known a couple of Ephraims.
It's a pretty rare name, though.
Well, it is. Yeah, it is, for sure.
Where'd you say you were from?
From Brookline.
Mass.
Brookline, Massachusetts.
Yeah, close by.
Yeah, what's up?
So I have a 96 Audi A4 Quattro I bought used about 2 years ago from the dealer. So for the first year I owned the car, I'd reliably get about 160 miles of the tank, which always seemed a little bit low to me. It's a 14-gallon tank.
Mm-hmm.
And then 6 months ago, I got engaged. My fiancée started to drive my car, and I noticed it was getting around substantially more to the tank, between 200, 210, 220.
160 is very low.
That's what I thought
at first.
You're
getting like 12 miles of the gallon, if you're lucky.
But what kind of driving did you do during all this time?
It's all sort of commuting back and forth to work and
short distances.
Exactly. And then she does the exact same thing, though. I mean, you know, we're living together. She works the same place I do, so we just drive back and forth.
Oh, so the only difference is now there are two of you in the car instead of one, and the gas mileage went up.
Well, sometimes she uses the car, and I walk to work if she leaves a different time than I do. So, but I took it to my mechanic thinking that maybe something was badly wrong, that was sort of, I couldn't figure out what was wrong that would make it, the car go farther for each tank.
No, could be anything wrong. Whatever was wrong got fixed.
What's it getting now, like 210, you said?
Yeah, 210, 220.
What, so you went to the, let me get this right, you went to the dealership and you said, I'm getting too many miles per gallon. Is there something you can do about it? And did they sell you the lead weight package? They said, we've been waiting for someone to come in. We got these 700-pound lead weights.
Well, I thought of something, maybe something my fiancé had done to the car that had fixed it, or if she, you know, something else had happened when she started driving it that had made it go differently.
Well,
but
I mean, do you work in the
financial marketplace?
I don't. No, I'm in healthcare.
You're in healthcare.
Yeah.
And when you drive together, does she drive mostly now?
Yeah, she drives most of the time.
I know why she drives.
It's
too.
You.
Because the way you drive scares
makes
the hell out
sick.
Of her.
That's actually true. You think that's it? Or?
Yeah, it's all you.
So I just drive.
Like
well,
a nut.
I mean, there are all kinds of things. You may be jackrabbiting. You may be riding the clutch. You may just drive so fast that you have to slam on your brakes at the next light.
You're a lead foot.
I can burn that much more gas, 50% more.
Think about it. I mean, every time you step on the brake, you wasted gas.
Right.
And if you do it all the time and you're braking hard, it means you were going way too fast for where you were.
And especially when you start applying the brake halfway between the light you just left.
I got you.
And the light you're approaching. No, as a matter of fact, I was driving a car recently that had one of these instantaneous miles per gallon things on there. They're not particularly accurate, but when you
floor... They really tell you how much you're stepping on the gas.
Right, but when you floor the thing, it reads like 2.1 miles per gallon.
Yeah.
And then when you're coasting, it's like 49 miles per gallon up to infinity.
I see. Yeah. So it really is a huge
gradient. It is huge.
Yeah.
Especially if all the driving you do is that kind of driving.
Right.
If you occasionally had gone out on the highway where you couldn't be doing as much damage to anything, you might have gotten up to 13 miles.
Right. I think you should just take your key and throw it down a storm drain.
Right.
Yeah. You're dangerous, Ephraim.
We're glad you're off the roads.
I'll work on my driving. Thank you very
much. See you
much.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Danny from Valdosta, Georgia.
From Valdosta.
It's as far south in Georgia as you can go before you hit the Florida line.
Right near Jessup.
Very close to Jessup, Georgia.
Yeah, man.
My brother took the train once from Boston to Florida.
More than once.
And he knows every stop along the way.
Jessup is a nice little town, isn't it? You've been to Jessup lately?
I have. I have some relatives that live there.
Yeah?
Yeah, my brother loves it. He smoked a cigar on the platform, and that's how he was able to determine it's a nice little town. Anyway, what's going on, Danny?
I've got a 1988 Dodge Dakota pickup truck with a 3.9 liter V6, and it's only got 305,000 original miles on it.
305?
It's making a knocking noise.
Yeah.
It's like a metallic bearing type knocking, and I originally thought it might be the valves, because in the morning when I would crank it, sometimes there'd be a little bit of smoke that came out of the exhaust.
Mm-hmm. So you crank it, and it starts up.
Immediately, it starts knocking.
It starts.
Like just that? Like that.
Just like that.
A
just
little bit
like
more
that.
Of a high-pinging sound than that.
More slapping.
That's it.
Well, I'll tell you, I have, although I haven't seen it for a long time, I have an 87 Dakota.
Okay.
With the same engine.
Mm-hmm.
I lent it to my son to move a couch 5 years ago, and I haven't seen it since. Well, he's having trouble lining up the helpers, you know.
And the couch is still in the back of the truck.
No, the couch is in my garage. Anyway, from practically day one, and I bought the thing brand new. It was the first new car I had ever bought in my life.
Right.
And imagine my disappointment when the cool weather came, especially, and I started that thing up one fine morning, and I hear coming from under the hood. And I immediately determined that it's the lifters making noise, or it's in the valve train. In other words, there's too much play between the push rods and the rockers and the valves, and that's what's making the noise. After it warms up, the noise goes away. So I take it to the dealer.
But your noise doesn't go away, right, Danny?
No.
Well, we're going to get to yours in a minute.
Yeah. Okay, excuse
but
me.
I take it to the dealer, and I'm disappointed because, like I said, this is my first new vehicle, and they tell me, what are you worried about? You've got a 7-year, 70,000-mile warranty. I said, good enough for me, and I go home. It's been doing that ever since. And, and the few times that I have heard it recently, it's gotten worse. But I've only got a third of the miles you have on yours.
Right.
But I would dare to say that you now have a collapsed lifter.
Well.
And the only way they're going to know is to pull the valve covers.
And I did that myself, and it's not coming from there. The only other place that I can figure that it might be is I thought it could either be the alternator or the smog pump.
Wait, what do you mean it's not coming from there? Underneath the valve cover?
Correct.
Did you use a hunk of hose to listen for the sound?
I did.
And how much oil went in your hair when you did this?
Well, here's what you need. So you haven't even determined that it's not coming from the engine per se, but in fact it may be coming from one of the accessories.
Exactly.
So you need to take the belts off.
Okay.
And run it without the belts.
Okay.
If the noise is gone, then it's obvious the engine is fine.
Right.
And what in fact is the culprit is one of the accessories. Okay. And I would lean, if you know, and then you can spin the alternator and you can spin the air pump, and you might be able to even reproduce the noise.
Okay.
And if you can't, then the thing I'd suspect is the crankshaft pulley, because that's two pieces. I think that's called a harmonic balancer.
Correct.
And that may be faulty, and that could cause a clack, 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 tick, 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 tick sound. But take the belts off and start it up, and you may discover that the noise is still there. If it is, and you're sure it isn't in the valve train, then it could be a wrist pin or something deeper down in the engine.
You gotta do some research with the hose.
Right.
And you gotta crawl around until you can really hear it. For example, if you crawl underneath, and it's louder when you listen to it through the oil pan than it is when you're standing up above somewhere, then
put the for sale sign on it.
Then put the sign right on it, because that means it probably is a wrist pin.
Now, what do I do to keep my wife from wanting me to sell the vehicle that I have loved since
You do all this at a friend's house.
I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. And possibly move in with the friend as well.
Yeah, well, tell her you're going to go help him move a sofa. See you, Danny.
Thanks a lot.
Right. Good luck.
Bye bye. Well, I figured that's the one.
You let us down the path here.
I know. That's all right. He sounds like a good guy.
And he's going to fix it.
Yeah, of course he is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I figured that's the reason that people buy pickup trucks, so they can make friends with people. No one ever asked me to help move anything until I owned a pickup truck.
Yeah.
People would flag me down in the street. Hey, I'm moving on Saturday. Can you help me? Sure. Who are you? 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Sharon from Cortez, Colorado.
Cortez, Colorado. How nice.
It is.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. I don't think I've been there, but it sounds nice.
It's very close to Mesa Verde.
I've been there.
Well, then you know where Cortez is.
I must have gone right through it.
I'm sure you did.
Must have been memorable, too.
You probably blinked.
I may have. What's up, Sharon?
Well, I have a question that's semi-automotive, but more about male psychology. And I thought that you are experts in that area and could help.
Juvenile psychology is actually our specialty. But we'll give male psychology a shot.
Yeah. Does your question involve the words, hey, watch this? Go ahead.
No. What my question is I always would like to have a big Christmas wreath with a large bow on the front of my car, and every year my husband talks me out of it. And I see it as an expression of holiday cheer and you know, goodwill.
And he says you're going to interfere with the flow of air to the radiator.
He does. He also has several other things that he thinks will happen as a result of this.
Yeah.
He says it's going to cause the engine to overheat, that it's going to suck in pine needles, and then he thinks it's going to void the warranty on the car. And I told him it couldn't.
Because no one will know.
Well, no, people drive all over with wreaths on their car, and if that was really happening, I'm assuming they wouldn't do it.
What kind of a car is it?
It's a 2000 Tahoe.
Yeah. Well, this is a classic case of theory versus practice.
Okay.
Right?
I would say
so. Your husband, theoretically, is crazy. That just slipped out.
No, theoretically, he's 100% correct.
Yeah.
And in fact, it will impede the flow of air. In fact, it could cause the engine to overheat.
Mm-hmm.
So he's right on all counts. Practically speaking, however.
All right. That's what I'm waiting for.
You know, because women are practical.
Certainly.
And you sound very practical.
Is your husband an engineer?
No, he's a doctor.
Oh, it's even
the worst kind. Doctors know so little about science. I mean, it's the absolute truth. They have no idea about anything, and yet they think of themselves as scientists.
Well, they are scientists.
It just goes
obviously
to show you that the body is nothing like a car.
But you're telling me it's okay.
Well, in fact, I, for many years, used to attach a wreath to the front of my Dodge Dakota pickup truck.
Okay.
Yeah.
With chicken wire. You know, actually, it was stuff called mechanics wire. And I used to weave the stuff through the grill. And mm-hmm. It only required a couple of points to attach it. It didn't have any lights on it.
You didn't have lights?
And don't forget, most of the wreath is a hole. Right? Most of the wreath is nothing. I mean, even...
And even the parts of it that aren't a hole
are
very porous, so to speak. I mean...
And they're going to allow plenty of air to get through, especially in the winter.
Well, now, when you say you used to, what made you stop?
Well, I blew the engine.
Yeah, the chances of it having any effect that anyone would ever notice, including your engine, are practically zero.
Yeah, now, if you lived in the southern hemisphere and it were 90 degrees on Christmas, I would say that I would not do it.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, but because it's cold, you've got that advantage.
And so your husband... I mean, let's be gentle with the guy because he thinks he knows something here, and we don't want to shatter.
No, I would use the approach that Tom and Ray agreed with you on every point.
Yes, and they told me to go ahead and do it anyway and tell you what Tom's wife tells him. Oh, shut up.
Okay.
Good luck, Sharon.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
I'll get the wreath tonight.
Good for you. Thanks for your call.
You mean you don't have it already?
No, I was waiting for your advice.
Oh, you're all...
What a woman.
I say you have full clearance.
Okay.
Yep.
See you later.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, Tommy, do you think we should take another call or take a break?
I always vote for the break.
That's funny. So do our listeners.
When we come back, are you going to have a great new puzzler?
How about just a new Puzzler?
Sold. We'll be back in a minute.
And even though text messages, select NPR and then type ENUF whenever we say it. This is NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler, which, as I promised, is from the prisoner.
The prisoner.
And the warden and the hat series.
Oh. All three categories.
Exactly. And this was sent in. I had to change it around a little bit, but not much. This was sent in by someone named David Young. And David, well, if he catches us, we'll get a gift certificate for the Shameless Commerce Division. Anyway, here it is. Basically, the warden admits three prisoners into his chambers there, you know, and he tells them, look, he said, one of you is going to have a chance to get out, and here's the deal. I'm going to blindfold all of you, but after I blindfold you, I'm going to put on your heads hats. I have three white hats and two black hats in front of me. Okay, so you're not going to know which color hat.
There are three prisoners.
There are three prisoners, but five hats.
Five hats, okay.
Okay, three whites and two blacks.
Yeah.
Okay, and so each of you is going to get a hat, and of course, you have to figure out which color hat you have if you're going to get released. So he blindfolds them and puts a hat on each of them. And then they're let out of the room in single file so that the guy at
with the
blindfolds and the hats on.
Okay.
The guy in the back can see the two people in front of him when his blindfold is removed. The guy in the middle can see the one person in front. And the guy in front can see nobody.
Nungatz is
right.
We'll say.
The guy in the front can see.
Wait. And they can't turn around.
No. That
they
would
have to walk around the prison in this order.
No. Until one of them identifies what color his hat is.
Yeah.
So the fellow at the back is asked what color his hat is.
Oh, this is right outside the prisoner.
Outside the warden's office. Their blindfolds are off.
Right.
And he says to the fellow at the back, who can see the two people in front and their hats, can you tell me what color your hat is? Don't forget, there are three white hats and two black hats available to the warden. The fellow in the back says nothing. He doesn't know.
Oh, if you get a wrong answer, you stay for an extra 10 years.
No, you just stay.
Just
until the next time he comes up with a different game.
Yeah.
The fellow in the middle is asked the same question. Can you tell me what color your hat is? He is unable to answer.
Okay. I got the answer.
The guy in the very front who can see no hats.
He knows.
He does. He knows. And he says, I can identify the color of my hat. And the question very simply is, what color was his hat?
And how the heck did he know it?
Bingo. Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the back of a 5-CD Ray Charles 50th Anniversary box set and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. But right now, if you have a question about your car or anything else, the number to call is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-2278-255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hey, guys, this is Michael Williams calling from Cordova, Tennessee. How are you?
Hi, Michael. No last names, please.
What's up, Michael?
I have a Nissan Sentra SER Spec 5. Great little car. It's a 6-speed manual. And, guys, I feel stupid because I do not know what to do with that 6-speed. No, look, I've asked everybody. I've asked my mechanic. I have read the manual. I've called the car dealership. Nobody knows what to do with that 6-speed. Can you help me?
What do you mean nobody knows what to do with it?
You do the
They don't know what it's for. I mean, they don't know when I should shift in, you know, or anything. I mean, is it when you get above 60, since the other gears are approximately 10 miles an hour each? What's going on?
I would go right from first to sixth.
My wife is thankful that it doesn't go from first to sixth that fast, trust me.
Oh. No, you should be in sixth gear at the same speed where you would normally use fifth gear. If you're shifting into fifth gear at 45 miles an hour, is that...
Right.
Okay, that's when you should be in sixth gear. And there's no reason not to use it then, as long as you have enough, as long as the engine has enough power.
If you're on a highway...
Right.
And it's level. then you hardly need anything to keep the car moving. You could almost, if you could run that fast, you could push it without much effort. So that's why the sixth gear, just to get you better gas mileage.
Huh.
And that's all that sixth gear is getting you. In fact, if you could go seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, if you can go to higher gears with bigger ratios, then in fact you could have the engine turning slower and slower and slower. And you'll notice if you look at your tach that when you're in sixth, it's turning a lot slower than it does in fifth.
Right.
And the slower the engine turns, the better your mileage is and the less wear and tear on the engine.
Cool.
Yeah, so you bought this thing knowing it had a six-speed figure and you just figure it out, right?
You know what? I needed a car, and I got in the thing and thought, dang, this is my car. And I just loved it. I loved the way it looked. I loved the way it smelled. I loved the way it felt. It just fit me, you know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, I looked down and saw the six-speed. I've always driven a manual.
Yeah.
But I've never driven a six-speed. And I thought,
Yeah.
Well, what when you're traveling at on the highway, for example, at, say, 70 miles an hour or whatever the legal speed limit is in Tennessee there, in sixth gear, what's the engine revving at, do you know?
It's pretty low.
It's under 2,000, isn't it?
Yeah, around 2.
And that's great. No, And I think more vehicles are going to have six gears or more as time goes on because that's the easiest way to improve mileage.
They don't have any room for any more gears.
They have to put them in the glove box.
There you go.
But use that sixth gear just like you would fifth gear. Get into it as soon as you can and use it like it were fifth gear. It just means that you'll have to shift a little sooner out of all the other gears.
That's cool.
Great.
I can do that.
See you, Michael.
Good luck,
thanks,
Michael.
Guys.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227.
And yet.
Yes. Yes.
We went forever with three.
We did, but engines were a lot bigger then.
Yeah, but all the more reason. You could have had six gears 50 years ago.
They couldn't figure out how to do it then. They could barely get three gears into those transmissions. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, I'm Jill from Buffalo.
Jill?
Jill.
Oh, I thought you said chill. You're going to be chilled pretty soon.
No, Jack and Jill.
Yeah,
Jack and
I got
Jill,
it.
We got it. How are you, Jill?
I'm fine. How are you?
Not too bad.
My story begins when I was driving to the hospital to pick up my husband. He had broken his arm in this big basketball tournament we have here.
Yeah.
He was there all of 10 minutes, and he was sprawled out with a broken arm. And I got a ticket for an overdue inspection sticker.
Mm-hmm. While you were making this mercy trip.
That's right.
Okay.
So then we took the car to be inspected, and they said we needed brakes. So we had them fix the brakes, and we picked up the car, and due to his broken arm, they asked me to back the car out of the service bay, which I did. And when I went to step on the brakes, there was none. And my foot went all the way to the floor, and I smashed into a car in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And
at that moment, at that particular moment, was your thought, oh, my God, what have I done? Or was your thought, oh, my God, what did these morons do?
That, the second.
Oh, it was. So you didn't have an attack of female guilt syndrome.
No.
Excellent.
And I was, it was awful. And everyone came running. Apparently someone forgot to do something.
Yeah.
Yeah, put the brakes in, maybe.
Oh.
And they were very sorry, and they told me to drive it, and he, punched the brakes or something with his foot, and he showed me that the car did, in fact, stop, which it did. But I'll tell you, I don't trust it right now.
What they forgot to do, Jill, was they forgot to test drive it. When you put new brakes on a modern car, a car that has disc brakes, you must push the caliper pistons all the way in to accommodate the new pads, which are thicker than the old ones. At least you hope they're thicker, because that's why you would replace the pads. They were all worn out, so you're replacing the thin, worn-out pads with nice, thick new ones.
Uh-huh.
But when you do that, you more often than not push the piston in much farther than you need to.
So there's a big space between the piston, which pushes on the brake pads, and the brake pad.
Uh-huh.
So when you get into the car after the new brakes have been installed, the first time or two that you step on the brake pedal,
goes to the floor.
It will sink to the floor because it's making up that space, and every application of the brake pedal is bringing that piston closer and closer to the brake pad until finally it makes contact and the car will stop. But until that point, the pedal can travel all the way to the floor, and each application of the brake pedal brings the piston closer, and the piston stays in that position. You pump the pedal again, it goes closer still. So each time it's making a step and doesn't retreat when you take your foot off the pedal.
So you can trust it now, because that's not something that they did that's going to cause the brakes to not work.
Ah, see, my husband told me that, but I didn't believe him.
You didn't. Well, how can you believe anybody with a broken arm?
That's right. And yeah. I thought, well,
and I know he broke his arm. I can see it now. He was reaching into his thing of popcorn.
Yeah.
And a player on the court fell on top of him, and that's how he broke his arm. Isn't that it?
That's right. And it was like an I told you so factor. You know right. what I mean?
Yeah, no, he's right, and they're right. I mean, they first of all, they did two things wrong. I mean, they didn't pump the pedal, and they also didn't test drive it. Because whenever you do a brake job on a car, before you let the customer take it, you have to test drive it.
Yeah,
to
I
see
mean,
if the brakes pull or
why didn't they back it out of the service bay? Why
That's
would
a good question.
Yeah.
Did they initially try to blame you?
No.
They knew.
No.
They knew right.
No.
In fact, they did say,
as she just reported, that they said, oh, he forgot to, and she said something about punch the brakes.
Do something, yeah.
Do something.
Right. Punch the brakes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, the brakes are okay, and these guys are okay. The fact that they didn't try to pin this on you is admirable.
Okay.
Most shops would have found an opportunity to blame the customer.
Oh, no, they didn't blame me at all.
Well, great.
Yeah, I think you're all right. Just drive
it. Thank you.
See you, Jill.
Thanks for calling, Jill.
You're welcome.
Next time, make them back the thing out.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, who's this?
Are you there? Hi, this is Brigadier General Edward Holman. How are you?
Brigadier General.
Hi, we have to call you General, I guess, huh?
No, you actually can call me Ed.
I just want you to know before we even start, I give up. I admit everything. I surrender.
I get a kick out of listening to your gentlemen on your programming that I hear. I run a lot on the highways out here. And
where's out here?
Well, I'm all over the United States.
Oh, really?
And I can't go into full depth about what I do. I'll just say that I'm
they'd have
from
to kill
one
us.
Base to another.
And he's looking for an excuse to kill us, actually.
Gentlemen, I bought a 2004 Crown Vic. It's a highway patrol car. It says police interceptor on the back of it.
Uh-huh.
At 110 miles an hour, it has a 140-mile-an-hour speedometer in it. And when it goes into fourth gear, it shuts completely down. And I have a friend of mine with the Highway Patrol, and he drove the car. He says, you know what? He says, they have changed the chip in this car.
Wait, what is it doing?
It won't go over 110.
It won't go over 110 even if I keep my foot flat down on the floorboard.
Oh.
Yeah, well, most cars do have programmed into the computer a shutdown that is triggered by the vehicle speed sensor sending a signal to the computer that says, don't let this thing go above a certain rev. So that's why you can't. You know, back in the old days, you could sit there with your foot on the gas pedal and rev the engine so high that you would blow the engine. You can't do that with modern cars.
You can't do that with this car. Well, why is it a police interceptor? Because my friend, his car will fly.
But
his car will do 140. I've seen it.
What, your friend has the same car?
He has the same thing, has the same insignia on the back, says police interceptor on the back here. Look at some of the new Crown Vics that are coming out,
sure.
The highway patrol cars.
But
they have the police interceptor, I have the big engine, I have the Goodyear Eagle tires, the same product that they would sell to any one of the law enforcement agencies.
And
I have that car.
Oh, maybe what you paid for was just the decal. Then when I said, look at this guy's some kind of a nutcase. Just give him the decal and all the other stuff. Give him the flashing lights, but don't put that chip in there because he's going to go out and kill himself.
But I don't understand why, just because he's a brigadier general, as long as he doesn't know about my past transgressions, why should we be telling him how to go faster than 110?
Because he's got diplomatic immunity.
No, Jill.
No.
I just want to make sure that the car's going to run.
If you wanted it to go over for whatever reason.
Because, for whatever reason.
Right.
And I don't go out here and operate like that.
Right.
I'd like
to
be able to outrun a Scud missile in case somebody fires
Yeah, on I-95.
Well, you know, they all wave to me when they're sitting in the medians and I go by at 90.
Well, you've got to go back to the dealer and with your friend and convince them that his car performs a lot better than yours. And if they won't do anything for you, what you could do is swap out the computers.
Swap out the computer.
Yeah, put your computer in his car and see if you better than that. Put his in your car and see if you can get yours to go over 110.
Okay.
Because it may be that you just have the wrong computer in there or the wrong chip.
Okay, well, I'll check that out and see what I can do about it.
Right.
I thought there might be an aftermarket company we could buy a chip from that I didn't have to go through.
Well, there probably is, but there's going to be somebody making them in their basement someplace. I don't think they're selling them to the general public. You know, there's a website that you might want to, for these cars, Crown Victoria Police Interceptor, CVPI.com.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll focus on that and see what I can find.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may be able to find out from some... You have to convince them that you're a nut, though, before you can log on. But I don't think you'll have much trouble doing that.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I can't believe that.
Good luck, and try to stay on the road, General.
I will. All right, gentlemen. It's good talking with you.
Same here.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day.
You too.
Okay, out here.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Oh, man.
110, huh?
A brigadier general.
Well, who else would you want to do that besides a brigadier general?
Nobody.
No, there you go. Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our interns are Chris Cuff and Emily Mackey. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisors just back from the Santorini, Stuffed Zucchini, Clam Linguini, Fettuccine, Cheese Panini, Cocktail Weenie, Dry Martini, Luncheoncini is John Bugsy Lawler. A little poetic license there. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our staff bicycle tester is Maya Sertz. Our loss prevention associate is Natasha DeMerchandise. Our staff urologist is Pete Shadil. Our repo agent is Carmine Now. Our cruise activity planner is Eaton Doolittle. Our practical joke evaluator is Odessa Goodwin. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. And the head of our Working Mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the pigeons, looking for someone else's Wi-Fi signal in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And remember, don't drive like my brother.
And remember, don't drive like my brother.
That's what I said. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1048, tippy-toe through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, the 10 worst things you can hear from your mechanic.
Other than, hey, guess what? I'm marrying your sister.
That's number 11.
This is a list we put together of the 10 worst things your mechanic can tell you about what's wrong with your car.
The calls that start with, are you sitting down?
Oh, I love those. Check out all 10 this week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Rotten Tomato vendors set up shop outside the building whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.